From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we go to Moscow and listen in on the weekly report from Maria Zakharova, spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry.
Good afternoon. We are beginning our briefing online as we've been doing so far. And I would like to start yet again with the present situation with the coronavirus. The situation, unfortunately, in the world continues to be rather harsh, despite the improvements in the epidemiological situation over the week, thanks to the quarantine measures in countries. Curbing the spread of the virus all over the world has not been achieved yet. As of 3rd of December, the number of people infected in the world has been over 64 million people, and the number of deaths, starting with the beginning of the year, amounts to about 1.5 million. I would like to once again underscore that we're talking about the world statistics. There are no universal evaluations of the developments in the epidemiological situation for the future. And we also have heard announcements of easing of the measures that have been introduced, but at the same time, in Europe and other parts of the world, we hear calls towards the citizens to strictly keep up with the medical and sanitary requirements. At the end of last week, at the briefing by the Director General of WHO, its head noting the differentiated spread of the virus called for conducting additional international efforts and developing unified approaches towards scientific investigations to COVID-19. And there will be an important event on the 3rd and 4th of December in New York, conducted by the General Assembly of the UN for the fight against coronavirus. Given the situation with coronavirus that we see today, and it's negative in lots of countries, including the most popular tourist destinations among Russian citizens, we once again call our citizens to refrain from creating dangerous situations for themselves and their relatives, and considering all the risks when going abroad. And I would like to underscore that all of the recommendations made by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and that it has been giving during its previous briefings and its, on its official resources due to the epidemiological situation in the world remain relevant today. And now a few words about promoting Russia's scientific developments in vaccines on international platforms, and also about the interest of different countries in purchasing such developments. On 2nd of December, as part of the special session of the GAUN, there's been a presentation of the vaccine Sputnik V, which has interested lots of our international partners. You know that there are three vaccines which are in clinical tests. First, Sputnik V, another one which has arrived at for clinical tests. It's VVAC, developed by Vector, and another promising vaccine is developed by the Scientific Investigation Center and Center for Immunological Medicine, named after Chumakov. And I would like to say a few words more about the work of the Russia's Direct Investment Fund and the Gamaleya Institute. They are not just working on enhancing the production of Sputnik V vaccine for mass vaccination in Russia, but also working on conducting a technological shift towards producing the Russian medicine on international, on foreign platforms and delivering it on international markets. Up to now, we've received solicitations for over 1.2 billion doses of Sputnik V, and just recently we received questions from mass media asking to provide details about the aspect which I'm mentioning now, about the international cooperation between Russia and other countries in this sphere. And that's what I'm going to do now. We have signed agreements about production of this medicine with leading pharmaceutical companies, which will make it possible to produce over half a billion doses of Sputnik V beginning next year. And we're talking with new partners about increasing the volumes of production. Last week, new results of the clinical tests, its second part, were published. And it demonstrated that it's efficient at 91.4% at the 28th day of, since the first injection, and its efficiency on the 42nd day after the first injection amounts to 95%. You can find this specific information on the specialist resources, so I'm not going to dwell on it in detail. I can just say that the interest regarding Sputnik V vaccine is increasing, including among the European Union countries, and parallel to provisions of samples to Hungary, we also conduct negotiations with other European partners. And on 27th of November, the Russian Direct Investment Fund received a delegation from France regarding cooperation on producing Sputnik V. Another aspect is assistance, be it mutual assistance or the assistance we provide to other countries in overcoming the consequences of the pandemic and curbing its spread. From 16th to 30th of November, the Russian medics were in Palestine, and in Palestine there were the medics from the first St. Petersburg State Medical University, and they assisted the local specialists that were treating COVID patients. Our medical specialists worked in 10 hospitals in Bethlehem, Nablus, Ramallah, and Hebron, and worked with exchange experience with the medical workers of infectious diseases in the critical help departments, and we received their gratitude for assistance during the times when the Palestinian medical system was struggling against the coronavirus pandemic. And now we're moving on to the diplomatic agenda, the agenda of Minister Lavrov. In accordance with the previous agreement, the head of the Armenian Ministry of Foreign Affairs will be visiting Moscow, and as part of this visit, the heads of our ministries will talk about the international and regional issues, as well as bilateral relations, and special focus will be on the statement by the leaders of Russia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia on 9th of November, with the focus on humanitarian assistance and re-establishing infrastructure and deblocking transport corridors in the region, which has been achieved on the 21st of November. The ministers will talk about a wide range of aspects of our cooperation in EAEU, CSTO, CIS, as well as UN, OSCE, the Council of Europe, BSEC, and other organizations. And the Russian-Armenian relations are characterized as partnership cooperation, and we expect that the upcoming negotiations in Moscow will foster the development in our bilateral cooperation for increased security and stability in Transcaucasus. And Minister Lavrov will receive the German party Alternative for Germany, headed by the co-chair of its fraction in Bundestag, Alexander Gauland, and this visit is implemented on the request by State Duma. On 9th of December, there will be 35th meeting of Minister with the heads of Russia's regions. It will be conducted as a video conference, and there will be heads of regions, members of the president's office at this meeting. They will be talking about the prospects of increasing the efficiency of youth aspect of international regional cooperation, including the pandemic factor and switching to digital media. This topic is very relevant given the increased role youth plays in politics and society, as well as the foreign affairs objectives of Russia, including in inter-regional formats. On on 3rd, 10th, 16th and 24th of December, we will be conducted an annual assembly of the Council for Foreign and Military and Defense Policy, and brings together intellectuals and specialists. The topic is, despite the pandemic, Russia 2020, what next? And traditionally, Minister Lavrov will be taking part in this assembly and will be presenting the main objectives of the diplomatic service of Russia for the upcoming times, and will answer the questions posed by the Council. And Ministry of Foreign Affairs assigns great importance to the aspects of foreign defense policy, and actually participates in intellectual fueling of this work. Talking about Nagorno-Karabakh, during the last week, we have implemented new efforts in normalizing the situation in Nagorno-Karabakh. We haven't seen any violations of the ceasefire regime, and telephone call between Prime Minister Mishustin and Prime Minister of Armenia Pashinyan were conducted, and then Minister Lavrov talked to his colleague Mr. Ivazian, and they talked about modality of the work of Russian peacekeepers, as well as further humanitarian aid to and maintaining religious and cultural objects. And the situation in Nagorno-Karabakh has been commented on by the President Putin during the online meeting of the CSTO, and you can get the details on this on our website. Russian peacekeepers continue 24/7 monitoring of the situation and controlling the ceasefire regime. They've been creating the circumstances for return of the refugees and provided security for civil transportation, as well as transportation of food and different goods, and conducted demining works. I would like to note that the search for a missing in action military man, as well as search for bodies of the deceased, is a very sensitive issue for Armenian and Azerbaijan societies. And our peacekeeping mission is taking part in this work as well, and we've been conducting solving humanitarian issues in Nagorno-Karabakh in cooperation with Armenian and Azerbaijan structures. The Center of Response has been increasing its efforts for helping the refugees, and since 14th of November, the number of returned refugees has been nearing the number 30,000 people, and every day we see 1,000 to 2,000 people return, and we've been working with interested international agencies, including the International Red Cross, and also working on a complex evaluation mission by the United Nations. We also received a question regarding the acts of vandalism, which were supposedly took place in Nagorno-Karabakh cemeteries and burial grounds. And it seems that responding to questions on this topic and responding to everything that has to do with maintaining intact Christian objects, those questions can be answered by UNESCO and its Director General, Audrey Azoulay, and we support them in their desire to send a special mission to the region, and this contact has been reestablished in the phone talk with Minister Lavrov on 20th of November, and we expect that the mission, which has been prepared in cooperation with Armenian and Azerbaijan sides, together with UNESCO's partner NGOs for protection of memorials, will be able to arrive as soon as possible and evaluate the situation. On the 13th of November in Geneva, we saw another meeting of the Committee on Syria, and we see that the Syrian authorities and opposition are talking about the national principles and basics, and with our Astana format partners, we implement continuous efforts for producing constructive dialogue between different positions, and the continuation of the work of this Constitutional Committee confirms the efficiency of our comprehensive efforts. We hope that the Syrians will be able to move forward in those negotiations regarding constitutional dossier, and hope that it will be in line with the goal of final and long-term stabilization in Syria, in correspondence with the Resolution 2254 of the Security Council and the results of the Congress for Syrian National Dialogue in Sochi. We see that the Turkish military is finishing up its presence at the churches which are now controlled by the Syrian governmental forces. On 26th of November, they finalized the evacuation of the fourth control state. At the same time, we see that the Idlib zone still is a zone characterized by high tensions, and on 26th of November, responding to provocations, Russian forces conducted attacks at the terrorist bases, and in the eastern part of the country, we saw an increase in the number of operations by ISIS and confrontations with the terrorist bands. And now moving on to the relevant events pertaining to international agenda relevant in the United Nations. On the 1st of December, the General Assembly and in correspondence with its resolution 75/5 honoring the 75 years since the end of the Second World War, conducted events commemorating the victims of the war, and it was possible thanks to the cooperation between Russia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Tajikistan, Turkmenia, China, and others. We decided to continue our tradition of celebrating every 5 years the end of the Second World War in the UN. And this undertaking has received great response all over the world, and 43 countries have contributed to this process. This solemn meeting of the General Assembly is a great reason for all countries interested to unite and prevent the re-editing of the end of the Second World War. This was the red thread throughout the entire meeting, and we received support from Asian, African, Caribbean, Latin American countries, as well as countries of other parts of the world, and all parts of the world talked about the contributions towards the common victory, and they also talked about the fact that there can be no alternative to international cooperation and multilateralism in the modern world. We also noted that there haven't been a common statement from the Eastern European countries, and Mr. Nebenzia, our representative at the UN, in the name of the 10 original co-authors and members of the CSTO, made their presentations together with other members of this organization. All of the speakers noted the importance of remembering the lessons of that terrible war, and they condemned the efforts to rewrite history and destroy memorials in honor of those who fought against who fought on the side of anti-Hilde coalition, and they characterized this victory as an important milestone in the history of humanity, since it produced the UN and started the decolonization process, thanks to which now we have 193 independent states members of the United Nations. And we were aggrieved by the efforts of the European partners to revise the situation their efforts to present the situation that this war produced a divide on the continent and produced crimes against humanity, and the Ukrainian speech was just indignating because they even arrived at saying that the Soviet military supposedly murdered thousands of Ukrainians after the occupation and even more after the retreat from the Ukrainian territory in 1941. It would seem that the Kievan representative was mistaken in the events. I will talk about this after the briefing. Trust me, I'll say everything I think about it. But as has been demonstrated by the General Assembly's meeting, the perception of the victory achieved in 1945 as a value universal for the entire humanity is important for bringing the international community together in order to fight back the present-day challenges and threats based on mutual respect and equality.
Between the members of the UN Security Council under area formula was held on the 2nd of December due to the upcoming anniversary of the Normandy format of the Paris Summit with the participation of the representatives from Donetsk and Lugansk Republics. The history of this event and the preparations for them resemble detective. We explained ahead of time to our German and French partners the purposes of the meeting, which is to analyze the implementation of the Minsk package of measures adopted in 2015. However, from the very beginning, Berlin and Paris from the outset tried to torpedo the meeting. They wanted to prevent representatives from Donetsk and Lugansk taking floor in the Security Council. Russia has been repeatedly asked to change the list of participants to reflect the Normandy format, meaning Ukraine, Russia, Germany, and France. We objected, saying that this format was meant only to prompt the parties of the internal Ukrainian conflict scheme Donetsk and Lugansk to implement the Minsk agreements, which is the only basis for peaceful settlement in the east of the country. Without direct dialogue between parties, we cannot achieve this goal. At the same time, we sent an invitation to the Ukrainian delegation, but it remained unanswered. It came to a point when our Western partners insisted on banning the broadcast of the meeting on the UN website, even though it is a normal practice for the events under the area formula. This is how the countries and their governments act while stating that they support the freedom of speech and expression, they support allegedly the need to respect different points of view. They succeeded in the efforts on banning the broadcast of the meeting in the UN website and resources. Based on these steps, we can conclude that they do not want to show the real picture of what's happening in Donbass. What are you afraid of so much? That people in your countries who you have been
происходит на востоке Украины, узнают правду. Вы этого боялись?
Overwhelming with information.
Мы развеем ваши страхи.
We know how to dispel the solutions, we know what to do, but we can see, based on this meeting, that this picture is not something that these countries want to show to their populations. Naturally, what has happened undermines the role played by Berlin and Paris as mediators in tackling the Ukrainian crisis. It also shows their willingness to essentially cover up for the actions of the Kyiv authorities. Such unconstructive policy
is very deplorable.
However, it did not manage to repeat the meeting. Other members of the Council participated actively, such as Algeria, Belarus, Lebanon, Venezuela, Egypt, India, Morocco, Syria, and Uzbekistan. A lot of interest was shown to this event in the internet, even though our colleagues tried to limit this interest. For example, the channel of the Permanent Representation of Russia in the UN in New York was viewed by over 20,000 people. The meeting marked the first statement of the representatives of Donetsk and Lugansk on the UN platform in New York. Reports were read by representatives of Donetsk and Lugansk in the Minsk Contact Group, Natalia Nikanorova and Vladislav Deinenko. The director of the Kyiv Center of Political Research and Conflictology, Mikhail Pogrebensky, also took part in the meeting. We have, I would like to repeat once again, sent a formal invitation to the Ukrainian delegation. They did not answer. The participant of the discussion highlighted the history of fruitful attempts undertaken by the Donbass people to make Kyiv respect their basic political, cultural, and humanitarian rights. They also highlighted the stage nature of Ukraine's state to implement the Minsk package of measures. The parties covered a lot of matters in the United Nations. It is very sad that representatives of the countries which allegedly care most of all about the people who live in those territories could not have an opportunity to hear it directly from the speakers. According to the reporters, Kyiv did not fulfill the majority of decisions achieved in the course of the Paris summit. We hope that Donbass representatives will actively participate in discussions on different multilateral platforms. You can try to switch off the screen, you can try to stop people from expressing their opinion, but we will find other ways to inform them. Venezuela, on the 6th of December, parliamentary elections will be held in the country, elections to the National Assembly. They are meant to become key in overcoming the differences dividing the Venezuelan society and community. Venezuela is tired of political provocations, coup d'etat attempts, and stands firmly for settling the crisis through constitutional elections. It is important to ensure that a wide circle of political powers is represented of 14,000 candidates from 107 parties and movements are competing for representation in the National Assembly. 98 of them belong to opposition. We hope that this newly elected parliament will become a platform for a constructive dialogue regarding the future of the country. Against the background, we find it deplorable that attempts to boycott the elections were taken. It is pointless to try to ignore such approaches. Those who try to undermine legitimate elections are interested in preserving instability and in preserving the Guaido project. We believe that elections is the most efficient democratic way of settling the differences existing in Venezuela. Russia will send a representative group of observers who will monitor the elections and will provide objective assessments after the elections. We call upon all countries interested in the Venezuelan settlement not to prevent Venezuelans from exercising their right to elect their representatives to the National Assembly and to define independently the course of development for their country. Another relevant topic, I would like to talk about the people in prison in the United States. We continue to closely follow the situation in the United States. when it comes to the imprisoned Russians in the context of the pandemic of the coronavirus, Russians held in American prisons or under investigation have a higher chance of getting infected. We have repeatedly expressed our deep concerns. We are continuing to work with our American partners on the matter. We are also concerned about the state of the healthcare system in U.S. penitentiaries and its capability of providing Russian citizens with everything they need as the need arises. Here is an example. Konstantin Yurashenko was captured in May 2010 in Liberia by American DEA. Employees, he was tortured and illegally moved to the U.S. after he was sentenced to 20 years in prison on a charge corroborated only by testimonies provided by counterfeit special services agents. Over 10 years, Yurashenko was neglected when it comes to his health, even though he had serious diseases due, inter alia, to torture to which he was subjected in Liberia. He only received medical treatment after Russian embassy sent appeals and requests. In the meantime, requests regarding a full medical examination remain unanswered. We are also deeply concerned about the situation with the Russian citizen Roman Seleznev. Even though he has serious health problems, prison administration doesn't provide him with the required medical treatment.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.